Surprise! I'm back. And I'm so sorry for all that dead air, as they used to say in the old days of radio. Ray Milland had a lost weekend. I had a lost month. But unlike Ray, the bender I was on was a public radio bender, which is kind of a contradiction in terms, right? I mean, a public radio bender? I mean, Chardonnay for a month? Well, if you go to the usual place, theworld.org/language, I'll post a link that takes you to the page that shows all of the things that I've been up to. It's basically a series on social class around the world. It aired on the big show last week. It completely consumed me. But now it's in the past, and I promise I will more than make up for those lost weeks. And that starts today. I have three stories on, well, big language issue here. Shall I call this country Burma or Myanmar? Burma, of course, is the old name, which was changed to Myanmar by the generals after they seized power. We did a little thing on that in The World in Words 149. I guess that with this gradual return to democracy, I guess there actually may be a return to the old name of Burma. Who knows? Well, we have three takes on what are classic pod themes, all related to speech. We have a story on English language learning. Learning English, of course, is an economic act in Burma. It's also a political act. And also the way it's taught there, well, that's quite eccentric, maybe forced on the teachers by the texts that they have in hand. Also, we have something on freedom of speech, how it's observed and practiced in Burma right now. And the problem with that is that no one is quite sure what the rules are at the moment. Also, we'll hear from a Burmese band, punk rock, in Burmese, yeah! And their investigation of how far they can push freedom of expression. So, Burma's a huge news story this year, and it's only going to continue. The country is stepping out big time, and the person at the vanguard of that stepping out is Aung San Suu Kyi. She's got to be right up there as the figure, alongside maybe the Dalai Lama, that is most likely to inherit the mantle of the world's most saintly living soul, once, of course, Nelson Mandela passes on. Aung San Suu Kyi, she has a world tour of sorts coming up. This is her first trip abroad in more than 25 years. She'll be picking up some huge prizes, including the biggest of the lot, the Nobel Peace Prize, which she was awarded back in 1991. She's picking that award up. She's picking a bunch of other awards up. And I'm sure she'll talk along the way about just how far she's come since, you know, house arrest to now becoming effectively the head of the opposition. And who knows, once there are elections, if they turn out to be fair, she may be the leader of her country. So, what's going on back in Myanmar? How are things changing? All of this foreign interest in the country as it opens up. Well, for one thing, they're learning English again. And English has some roots there. Remember, Burma was a British colony until independence in 1948. And at that time, in 1948, it had a large English-speaking elite. It was a wealthy place. Then, of course, it became increasingly isolated politically and pretty much every other way under the generals. Certainly, it was linguistically isolated. But now, with the recent political reforms, Burmese people, they're flocking again to English classes. The world's Mary Kay Magstad visited a couple of classes in the country's biggest city, Yangon.
To get to Miao Kiang's popular all-day English class, you walk down a dusty side street, into a tea shop, and through it to the other side. And there you are.
My major purpose in life, major purpose, have a
business here. There are some 500 students crammed into this makeshift space on low wooden benches. Their beefy, middle-aged teacher sits up front in a plaid shirt and a sort of male sarong called the longi, reading from the book he selected to teach his students English, The Master Key to Riches, a self-help book by Napoleon Hill, published in 1956. One of the students is a Buddhist monk.
This book, it gives knowledge to me. That's why I study this English book.
But then he admits he doesn't really get what the book's trying to say. I page through it. The front cover says, the world-famous philosophy of personal achievement based on the Andrew Carnegie formula for money-making. It includes praise for the art of salesmanship, the art of competition, the blessings of individual initiative, and the necessity of honest production to justify the art of advertising. I tell the monk I can see why this might be hard going for him, and he seems relieved. But Myat Kyang thinks the lessons in this book are perfect for young Burmese, especially at this moment in their country's opening up.
Yes. So you see, in these books, we can get that a lot of knowledge from business sense or social dealing.
Myat Kyang is 53, so he grew up under military rule. In fact, he says, he served as Burma's military attaché in India in the late 80s and early 90s, so he was away during the 1988 crackdown. He says he's glad to see the current reforms. He says they're very nice, but he seems a little wary. He doesn't know why the government is making these changes.
The present government, they want something. They want something. I don't know what their aim. Otherwise, they don't do like that.
Whatever the military's aim, Myat Kyang says his students need the help with their English. He says many are poor and can't afford more expensive lessons elsewhere. Here, they pay about $4 a month to come to as many classes as they like. Much of the class seems to be in Burmese, but 21-year-old student Myo Myint Aung says it's working for him.
I am a lazy student, but you know, I attend the class, so the teacher motivates me.
Burmese schools teach English from kindergarten on, but Myo Myint Aung says that doesn't count for much. The teaching is bad, and there's little opportunity to practice.
Our education system is systematically destroyed, so we have no knowledge of English.
And yet, says 28-year-old engineering graduate Nan Kin Lei, English is essential for many professions. She says Myanmar is different from Thailand and Japan, where they translate the relevant subjects into their own languages.
But in Myanmar, we had to learn the engineering or medicine through the English medium. Yes, if you don't know English, you cannot be expert in your subject.
She's coming to this class, she says, because she's ashamed her English isn't better than it is. She's impatient to improve. An energy that seems shared by many young Burmese. This much smaller English class is taught by a non-profit organization called Myanmar Egress.
We have to educate the people to make the real positive changes here. So we're trying to be the change agent. So, you know.
Lala Win heads the English department here. She says Myanmar Egress runs many other classes, too.
Social entrepreneurship, which is the disguised name for political leadership course, and management for those who want to join NGO workforce, and civic education, applying leadership, especially tailored for the ethnic minorities, and public policy for the MPs.
In other words, Myanmar Egress is trying to train up a competent civil society to help Myanmar move in a new, more democratic direction. She says the military government had its suspicions when the group started doing this in 2006.
So in the classes of Egress, the military intelligence, you know, they may sit down or they videotape, record and, you know, report back. But they realize Egress is just education institution. It's not trying to threaten their power. So they let us go, and they even sent their people to join the courses.
Now, Myanmar Egress runs courses teaching international standards to police, as well as to private citizens. Lala Win hopes all this training and education can lead to Myanmar once again becoming a regional leader in education, as it was in the 1950s.
I don't want to compete with Thailand for tourist country. I don't want to compete with China factories. I don't want to compete with India with outsourcing. We have our own advantage. Even now, the international schools in Myanmar have a lot of neighboring students, like Korean, Thailand, Chinese. You know, it's way cheaper than their country, and they're getting good standard education. So they started sending their kids to international schools in Myanmar, but this is in small scale.
Take it larger, she says, and Burma can reclaim its competitive advantage as an education hub. Myat Kyang's classroom is certainly doing its bit. A couple of his students tell me he has inspired them to become English teachers themselves. Meanwhile, they're stuck into Napoleon Hill's exhortations to lead successful entrepreneurial lives. The teacher says when he gets through this book of Napoleon Hill's, he plans to teach all the rest. For The World, I'm Mary Kay Magstad, Yangon, Myanmar.
Wow, that's some dedication those Burmese had. I can't imagine I would have made it, like learning a foreign language using get-rich-quick books that are decades old. I guess it speaks also to the desperation that people have just to make some money and engage with the rest of the world. Okay, now on to speech in Burma. And clearly, there's an awful lot more of it that is permitted than there used to be. But how much? Well, it's difficult to tell. From here, it's difficult to tell from within as well. There have been by-elections earlier this year, and they certainly seem to have been paving the way for things like democracy and freedom of speech. Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy was allowed to take part in these elections, but there were only 10% of the seats in the lower house of parliament that were actually up for grabs this time. That said, the National League for Democracy pretty much swept them. It won 43 of the 44 seats that it contested. But because the other 90% of the seats, the ones that didn't have any by-elections this year, because they're controlled largely by the military and their proxies, well, the outcome of these most recent elections has had no effect on the balance of power, at least in the short term. So what does that mean right now for someone who wants to give a speech in a public place or write an article that's critical of Burma's rulers? Here's the BBC's Mike Thompson.
Aung San Suu Kyi is mobbed by tens of thousands of supporters in Mandalay. The last time anything approaching such a scene was witnessed, when the NLD won the 1990 elections, the military tore up the result and cracked down hard. But history is not about to repeat itself, insists President Thein Sein's chief political adviser, Koko Klen.
Now everything is changing. All the whole world are demanding the democratic systems, and market economy and liberal democracy is now out of the day. And every people quite aware that we need a change. So this motivation drive the very big change in our country. So we cannot go back.
I'm in the middle of a square in central Rangoon, and there must be something like 100 people gathered here for a political rally. And the music you can hear is a song dedicated to Aung San Suu Kyi's father, the founder of Burma. And it's become pretty much the unofficial national anthem.
I'm feeling very disappointed in this political situation. It's very difficult to have a rally with the people.
You'd have thought that Kon Myin Thur, chairman of the Myanmar National Congress Party, would be happy. He was given permission to hold this pre-election rally in central Rangoon after laws banning public gatherings were relaxed. But he says many here don't trust what they're told.
I just applied for 200 people. I expected more people, but they won't come into the park.
Why won't they come into the park?
Most of the people still think that politics is still dangerous in Burma, that's all.
So they're afraid to come here?
Yes, of course.
Any true democracy needs a free press, something Burma is on the way to getting, but certainly has not got fully yet. Though here at the country's National Theatre in Rangoon, they're handing out the nation's first press awards to encourage local journalists to keep on pushing at those barriers.
After the emergence of the present government, there were more relaxations on press censorship. About 75% of relaxation, we got it.
Mon Win Tar, founding editor of Rangoon's People's Age political journal, says press censorship has been relaxed, but around 25% of stories remain off limits.
We have to face the censorship when you write about the ethnic problems. And then it's very difficult to publish about the corruption, especially the government officials. And then we have to be very careful writing about the military, you know, and about the 2008 constitution.
Many of Burma's most outspoken journalists have joined the thousands of political dissidents who have fled the country, many to neighbouring Thailand.
I'm on my way across Chiang Mai to meet the managing editor of the Irrawaddy newspaper. He's been reporting on Burma from Thailand for 25 years. What would it take for him to go back?
Freedom, security, protection. Freedom to criticize and write without fear.
Editor-in-chief Aung Soo, whose paper has been highly critical of the Burmese government, was surprised to be given visas to visit the country twice so far this year, after being denied entry for more than two decades. But even the rash of recent democratic reforms there don't go far enough for him.
To go back to Burma as a journalist and to set up there, it's still a long way to go. I think I don't want to become a chicken in the basket. You know, if you walk to the fresh market and you see the chicken in the basket, the government can take your neck out and chop you any time they want.
At first sight, Ueng Daka's Magin Monastery in the east of Rangoon looks a haven of peace and tranquility. Prayers from a nearby pagoda fill the evening air as red-robed monks potter past. But the building still bears the signs of that previous era of hope, the Saffron Revolution of 2007. After being sealed since the revolt, smashed bowls litter the floor, overturned cupboards and torn clothes lie covered in dust. 5 years have passed, reforms have come, but trust has yet to return.
People are still living with fear. Although this country is now being ruled by so-called democratic government, everybody knows that these are the same people with different uniforms. So the fear is always there that the generals might come back.
But although hundreds of political prisoners remain in jail, the military maintain their unelected seats in parliament and fighting continues in Kachin State to the north, there's no doubt that this country has changed for the better. Hope exists where there was little before. But Ueng Daka, who spent 4 years in jail for his part in the Saffron Revolution, says if democracy fails this time, it won't be without a struggle.
Monks, being the citizens of the country as well, will always keep an eye on what is happening in the political scene of the country. If needed, we will come in again to save the people.
That report from the BBC's Mike Thompson. And now, a very different arena in Burma in which free speech is tested. Punk music. It's funny, I'm just done being interviewed by the big show's Marco Werman on the Sex Pistols and their crossing the free speech line during Queen Elizabeth's Silver Jubilee in 1977. They were willfully crossing it, of course, and as a result, their song, God Save the Queen, it was banned from being played on the radio and on the BBC and other radio stations too. And that notoriety was all the Pistols needed to become massive stars. Very effective way to use the limits of free speech. Well, I'll post a link to that story at theworld.org/language. Very different situation from that with the Burmese punks. And the situation for young musicians in Burma is especially complicated because they're not just dealing with government censorship. There's also international sanctions against Myanmar. The US and others, they're relaxing their sanctions now, but plenty of them are still in force. And of course, they're having an onerous effect on, well, punk bands. Totally unintended, I would imagine. Here's Bruce Wallace.
Scanning recent messages on the Burmese band Side Effects Twitter feed gives some sense for what it's like to be a punk rocker in Yangon, Myanmar's biggest city. One from the beginning of January reads, "Twitter is still new for us because they had banned it for a long time." Later that day, electricity went off again. Damn! A few weeks after that, Buddhism helps us a lot with how to use internet patiently. 99 times slower than the connection in your country. Sluggish internet and spotty electricity are two of the hurdles Side Effect faces in trying to get their music heard. Here's another. Presidential Executive Order Number 13,310. That's one of the U.S. sanctions against Myanmar. Side Effect was raising money on Indiegogo, a crowdsourced fundraising site. They'd raised almost $3,000 before Indiegogo froze their account and refunded the money to the donors. They were concerned that sanctions would block distribution of the money.
We are not working with the government. And
Darko C is Side Effects singer and guitarist.
We are just a group of young people, you know, who are trying to rock, you know, Yangon and Burma.
The band members get their rock from some familiar sources. They cite Kurt Cobain as a huge influence, and love groups like The Strokes, The White Stripes, and Yeah Yeah Yeahs. The band's drummer, Sertu, had a musical upbringing that was a little less rock.
My mom, she's a choir leader, so she made me to go.
He sang tenor in his mom's church choir, but counts the drummers from Blink-182 and Korn among his more recent influences. The subjects of Side Effects songs also take on some traditional rock themes. This one is titled Yi Wei Wei.
That means, getting drunk.
Darko wrote this 6 years ago, right after he finished college. The band didn't have money for a rehearsal space, or even a drink.
We were so down, so the best thing that I can do is to go to a friend, you know, who can buy me a drink.
Other lyrics deal with ladies. This one, called Film, is about taking a date to the movies to get away from the watchful eyes of uptight adults. To put both of these songs out on an album. That's one of the things they were going to use the Indiegogo money for. Since that disappeared, they've been putting appeals out elsewhere and have re-raised about $500. They're getting help from some friends. The Canadian duo Handsome Furs is asking its fans to support Side Effect. The two bands spent a week hanging out when the Canadians played Yangon in 2010. Dan Beckner of the Handsome Furs says he was blown away by the heroic length Side Effect went to play music.
Every minute I was there and talked to these guys, I was just like, my friends in the artistic community are kind of the giant babies compared to these guys.
Handsome Furs wrote this song, called Serve the People, about Myanmar. They dedicated it to the guys in Side Effect. From the north of the north, where Danny ain't gone. The song became an anthem of sorts for Occupy Wall Street, but Beckner says he's most proud of the fact that it played on a Yangon radio station. Side Effect returned the favor, recording this version of the Handsome Furs song, Radio Kaliningrad. Recently, Myanmar has gotten international attention for taking some steps towards reform. I asked the band if things felt different in Yangon. Darko said he didn't think life had changed very much yet for ordinary people. One thing did occur to him, though.
Before, you know, I wouldn't be dare to talk to you like this. After this program is online, the government guy will be knock on the door, knock, 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 and can I ask you a question? Can you come with us for a moment? And then, you know, like 45 years sentence. That could happen to us. But now, you know, we don't really feel that fear.
The EU and the US have been talking about ending sanctions and have already lifted some restrictions. Side Effect hopes that more bands will come to play in Yangon and that soon they can get the money together to release their first album. For The World, I'm Bruce Wallace.
Okay, that's it for this week. More next week? Really? In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter. I post lots of language stories there. My handle is Patricox, P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. And The World in Words is also on Facebook. See ya. I like this music.